Yeah, I'd like to talk about the design and the implementation of Nullis, because I'm hoping that eventually somebody else might want to be interested in hacking on Nullis. And as such, it would be nice if they know something about it first. Let me first go into the history of Nullis. I'm not that clear on the initial part, because I didn't actually work on Nullis initially, but we used to have the GMC file manager, which is the derivative of MC, which is a console application. It was written by Miguel, I think. Yeah. And it has some cool stuff, like a built-in VFS, which let you read all sorts of file systems and remote stuff. But, yeah, never having looked at its code, I've heard that it had issues due to its console heritage. So, in the .com era, the useful company started to basically, or the .bomb era, or whatever, to create a new file manager for GNOME. And they, I guess they liked the VFS idea, so they used that, but it's also split out into a separate library so other apps can use it. So they wrote all this initial stuff, got it up to a 1.0 release, and it was pretty good, but it was slow and it had issues. I think it was a bit ahead of its time when it comes to features in the platform, which is why it looked really cool, but it didn't perform well, and it was sort of non-gnomey. So eventually they folded, because, well, I guess they didn't have any revenue or anything. But Darren, the main architect, I think, of Nullis, he remained working on it for, I don't know, half a year or something, and he started the initial GNOME 2 port, and he did like an enormous amount of work in it, which we are really glad for. And somewhere about there, Red Hat was doing the 7.2 release, which was the first one based on Nullis instead of GMC. So we had to do a lot of work in it, and somehow I was picked up to fold all that back to upstream. So I started doing a lot of work on it and got involved with it, and eventually Darren's patience ran out or something, his money maybe. So he asked me to help him, and eventually he paced out his work on it, and I took over as the sole maintainer. That was sort of a lot of work though, so eventually I picked up a new one. And it's Dave, Captain Printman. These are the basic modules of Nullis, or what it uses. The base GNOME VFS layer is, it's where all the file operations are done, and also abstract them in a way that it works on FTP and HTTP, web dev, and recently on SSH and stuff like that, SMB. And then there's the Bonobo layer. The Bonobo is really a component system, but we don't really use it as such. We merely use the Bonobo UI part, where we plug components, like visual components, into the main window and merge their user interfaces. And then we have EO, which is sort of strange. It was once libnullis internal. It's a library of utility functions that's really not related to Nullis as such, but quite useful. And we do our best to, whenever they stabilize, try to move them to base platform libraries. Some of it is sort of specialized. We don't recommend anybody to use that, depend on it in any other app, but if there's a part of it that interests you, you can just kind of paste it, or ask us to maybe put it in the base libraries. And then there's the Nullis app, which is the main binary and a couple of libraries. some of them private, some of them not. There's a couple of components that I'll come to. First, I'm going to talk something about the source tree layout for Eel and Nullis. You can find your way in the code. Eel is pretty simple, it's just a huge directory of stuff. A lot of them are just extensions of GTK, glib, and HK, and whatever. It's the, like the Eel GTK extension, Eel GNOME extension for libgnome. And they're basically just wrapper functions that add some extra, you know, nice to have stuff. And then there's a couple of widgets used by Nullis. The canvas, which is it's basically cool canvas, which is it's a fork of the pre-anti-alias GNOME canvas ported to GTK2, so it works really well, which sets it apart from the GNOME canvas. There's the eel editable label, which is the rename widget. It's basically a multi-line GTK entry, which is sort of useful. I guess maybe other people would like to use that. I don't know. And there's the ellipsizing label, which is a label that adds the dot, dot, dot. If there isn't enough space to show the whole string. That one is sort of hacky, so maybe people shouldn't use that all that much. It's really slow. It works. There's a couple of stock dialogues for warnings and errors and yes, no things. Stuff. And there's a couple of like trivial helper functions for strings. Eel preferences is like a gconf helper thing for global preferences and has some functions to set up play dialogues for the preferences. Eel background is some crafty allow you to have gradients and images and stuff in widget backgrounds and drag and drop stuff to them. And the Nullis tree is a bit more complicated. It has several libraries. The really the main part of Nullis is in the libnullis private library. It doesn't have any, well, it does have widgets, but it doesn't actually do much UI stuff. It has all the file handling, the icon handling, the icon canvas, which is like the base for the icon view. And it's used by all the components built into Nullis in the main binary. But it's private to Nullis because we don't want to export this API because it changes a lot. And, well, it's just kind of grouty at places. And then there's the libnullis library, which is the public interface for external views. It has the IDL that's used between like the main Nullis window and the views. And it's really pretty simple. If you read the IDL, you can understand how the main communication between the views and the window, or how they work. And then there's the source directory, which contains the main application. It has the main function and the Nullis application singleton object. And it also has the main window object, which is Nullis window, and all the stuff that handles creating Nullis windows and browsing, well, not browsing, but like changing location and navigating in them. And inside there we have the file manager directory, which has all the standard views, like the icon view and the list view. So if you actually start up Nullis and the Nullis window without having a view plugged in, you really don't get any file management operation at all. It's just like copy-paste in the menus, file flows, and maybe some of the Go navigation stuff. But there really is no file operations. They're all based on the standard directory views. They just merge in their own file operations. So there are basically two main views, the list view and the icon view, in that directory, and the implementation plus the file property dot one. And then there is the components directory with various components like sidebars, the text view, and property pages, Trover and stuff. And then there's some various code and cut and paste stuff, recent files, multi-display, multi-head, exec, and some stuff. And then the magic lib background directory, which is actually a TBS include, which has some of the desktop background image configuration stuff. So, Nullis window is the main window. Everything, every window you see except the dialogs and the property windows are Nullis windows. It inherits from Bonobo window, which gives it the toolbars and the menus and the ability to merge in stuff. So it basically has that plus like a main area which contains the Nullis view frame, which is like a place where you can plug in Nullis views. Oh, and there's also the sidebar, which has like a set of Nullis view frames. So both the main views and the sidebars are actually Nullis views. And using various Bonobo magic, we pick up the right type of view for any directory based on, you know, user configuration, current MIME type, the location you're viewing, etc. And then there's the standard views. They all derive from the common class FM directory view, which has all the main operations for files, and it merges the directory view UI, but really doesn't do anything. And then there's the icon view and the list view, which derives from that and add, like, I think the icon view adds some specific things like compact layout, sorting, icon stretching and stuff to the UI. And then it uses a canvas-based implementation to render the directory as like a set of icons and stuff. The list view is similar. I don't think it actually has any extra UI, but it uses the tree view to give a list of all the files and stuff. And then there's the desktop view, which is, it derives from icon view and just adds support for desktop icons and some like removable media stuff. So, in order to have a nice user interface, we can never block that will, you know, irritate the user. And in order to do that, we avoid any I/O on the main thread. I mean, that's not entirely true. We do actually do I/O sometimes. We try to avoid it. And we have like the hope that I/O is the only slow operation we do, so we shouldn't be blocking. Of course, that doesn't always seem to be right, but there are other slow things that happen, but still we're pretty snappy even when doing high I/O stuff or large amount of I/O. So the way we do I/O is using the GNOME BFS asynchronous calls, meaning we call in file system operation, and when it finishes, we get a callback. And this is all implemented in GNOME BFS by having a thread pool, and then when you do an operation, you allocate a job, you queue it in the queue, and eventually one of the threads will be free, and you pick up the job and execute it, and well, then you switch back to the main thread and call back and say, I'm done. And there's also some sort of priority scheme, so high priority I/O gets ahead in the queue, and hopefully works out. That's sort of nasty to work with, though. I mean, directly, just lots of callbacks and stuff. And in order to make this easier, we have the Nullis file object, which encapsulates all Nullis about the file that we currently know. So you start out, there's like, they're basically singleton objects, so for each URI there's only ever one nullless file object at the same time. So you ask for a nullless file object for a certain URI, you get back an object that says, yeah, this file is called foo, but I don't know anything else about it. So if you ask it, you know, what permissions do you have, you get back, I don't know. But if you actually want some specific set of information, and there's a list of attributes that we've defined for stuff that you might want to know, and you have to request, like, yeah, I'm interested in size, or it's actually like stat information, or MIME type, or whatever. And then you have to register in one of two ways to get the callback. Either there's a call when ready thing, which is typical asynchronous thing. You say, I want to know the size. And you hand it the pointer to function, and you get the callback when it's done. Or if you want to show something all the time, like if you have a sidebar information thing, you want to show it all the time, you add a monitor for that specific piece of information. Whenever it changes, or at least whenever nullless knows it changes, which is most of the time if you have FAM enabled, or otherwise only when nullless itself does the modification. You get the change signal emitted on the file object, you can catch that in your display the new data. There's also a nullless directory object, which is basically the same thing, but for files. Yeah. You mean the byte size or the number of files? Yeah, there isn't any support for that, I think. I don't know, the file property dialog does that. I'm not sure exactly what that is. I don't think so. There is some support for counting the number of files in the subdirectory, which is sort of integrated. There's an attribute called deep file count or something. You can ask for it. Where file count is also available, which is just, you know, the number of direct descendants to directory. Yeah. And it's also what nullless uses to cache data, so as long as there is an nullless file object alive for a certain URI, you cache all the information for it. And, you know, whenever you browse the directory, the directory view will hold a reference to the nullless file object, so it will cache all the information for it. Which is good, but it also may cause like caching coherency problems. If you don't have FAM or similar, or if you're showing something that doesn't support FAM, like NFS or FTP or whatever, then the nullless file data can become stale unless you like close the window or reload it or something. So you can actually, if you actually really need the latest data, you can validate the nullless file data and then request it again. Yeah, there are various ways of extending nullless. And one of them is writing a DFS module. People have probably seen me on mailing list complaining about cracked DFS extensions. I really, please don't make any more cracked DFS backends. It's really meant to be a file system thing. And all the semantics are weak enough already without having to have things that only create certain kinds of files or certain names. Have to have special case handling for if you modify the contents, the file name changes, and all sorts of crazy stuff. It just makes it hard. And we have a few workarounds in all this, but in the future, I hope more and more. I mean, especially if we get a DFS-based file selector, people are gonna want to have DFS support in all sorts of apps, and then we can't have any random behavior when strange VFS backend. But it is excellent for doing things like SSH, SMB, FTP, web dev, things that are essentially file systems. Now you can write nullless views. At the moment, that isn't as easy as one could hope, because you can't really use any of the internal stuff in nullless. Like, you can't use nullless files, because that's a nullless private, or nullless private. So, but for some stuff, it's really good. I mean, if you've tried the standard EG view for files, and also the standard EG collection thing, yeah. No, I mean, if you look at the VFS thing, if you can't create an arbitrary byte stream and rename it and have like same file system semantics, I don't think you should do it. It just. Maybe, but you know, then somebody's gonna like create a shell that uses GNOME VFS and you CD into it and gets all strange. Somebody runs like a recursive find in it and like gets lost in some database. I don't know. It really should be file systems. Well, I mean, some of the stuff now we have is sort of useful. I mean, take the font stuff for instance. It is sort of files, but it's still strange. Like if you drop the font file on it, nullless won't recognize that it's there, because when you actually drop it, it gets renamed to the, you know, the font display name or whatever, and it's not anymore called whatever .tft you called it before. So like nullless is not going to handle that, and you know, we can't go around adding that stuff to file selector and do any other sort of app that uses GNOME VFS. Yeah, anyway, back to nullless views, yeah. There's also some rampant creations and various nullless views that I like or and some that I don't like, but my idea of a nullless view is as a read-only thing, mainly for reading documents. And if you ever want like to edit stuff, you should launch a proper application for it. But this point is very contended to, and there's been some flame wars about it. You don't actually have enjoyed it, yeah. Oh yeah. Well, I mean, take for instance some people don't like it, but for instance, the text view, to view a simple text file, I think that's fine. I mean, if you're browsing documentation, reading files, or, what? Yeah, you can, but I mean, you could use an application to browse a directory too, right? It's sort of hard to decide when you want a view. When you want a direct, or when you want a new app, or when you just want a new window with view, or whatever. And I don't think we're still completely decided on all this, but my idea is that if you want to consume data, you just want to read it and view it and whatnot, you have text files or PDF files or images, and things that you mainly view, then you should use views for it. Of course, you're still, like, you can still set the default handler for any type. So if you're tied to somebody, maybe you always want to have open images in GIMP or something, but I think that's how I would like it, yeah. Printing, I mean, some stuff is nice. Printing maybe, yeah, printing would be nice. But if you go into the whole save things and you have a modified state from the, I mean, it's supposed to be a view of the current file, right? So if you modify it, you view it, or do you have like, there's some changed state here, where is that saved, when is it saved? And it gets all tricky, you know, because the user might suddenly, you know, press up or something, and then it doesn't go up, it's, instead it pops up some dialogue you want to save. I mean, if you can do immediate changes to a file, right, maybe that would make sense, because the direct review does allow you to change stuff, but it's immediate, and it's not like it's saved in the state of the viewer. Moving further, we have non-type-based context menu, also highly contended recently. For you can register for specific MIME types, operations to add in your context menu. And this is really simple, especially if you use Python or something. Basically, you use droplet.server file that adds the MIME type of the UI scheme you want to handle. And then it loads up your object and passes it a list of URIs to handle. There's currently much discussion about where to place this, and how much to use it, and like the context menu is too large, and yeah, whatever Eugenia wants to say. And then you can do file property pages. You can add tabs in the file property dialog. Mostly, I think, I mean, even though you could implement read-write property pages, I think that would be sort of hard. It's really easy to create, you know, extra information pages. Like the Nolus media thing has for AUGs and whatnot, you can see the bitrate and the length and, you know, the ID3 information for MP3s and stuff. There's a super small image property dialog or tab in Nolus, which just shows the resolution, but that could easily be extended to show like digital camera information about pictures and stuff, which is sort of nice, I think, although a bit hidden, perhaps. And you can write sidebar views. I don't know if anybody really wants that. Some people really dislike the sidebar, and a lot of people don't really show it, except, you know, when they really need it or something, which is seldom. But if you have a really cool sidebar idea, you can try that. It should just work. And I guess the most common way to plug in is to use tab. Make sure your app registers to handle the MIME type it handles. Yeah, so apparently we need to work some on the MIME system. It's a bit complicated right now to get the right applications. But eventually we'll fix that, and that's going to be a really important thing when it comes to integration. You should just never ever have to do anything more than find a file and double click on it, and then you get whatever you want. And yeah, do you have any questions? Yeah. Yeah, we currently do support metadata, but it's totally internal from all this. And there's long been an idea, at least, of exporting that to GNOME VFS, so any app could use it. And that would be really nice, but we're not fully there yet when it comes to the platform for that. I'm working on a GNOME VFS daemon. So when we have that, we could share the metadata between every app, and then people could set things like icon and the notes thing and various other things. Yeah, like any static metadata you want, right? And we should probably standardize a few. But it's not there yet, and it's going to be hard, to get it to perform well, because Knowles uses it extensively, and it just has to go out of process every time. That can slow things down. So, yeah, that needs a lot of thought. Yeah. Well, yeah, there wouldn't have to be some sort of caching mechanism and decomp-like thing where it propagates changes to, you know, the people monitoring various parts of the metadata tree or something. It needs work. Yeah. Go Yeah, I don't ever want to have metadata extracted from the file. I want to have... So you can get like ID3 data from the standard. Yeah, it is sort of nice, but it also, you know. Yeah, that's the problem, I guess. And it gets racy and stuff, and you get changes to files. Somebody else? Yeah, I don't like that either. Or at least the main problem with it is that stuff that if you use a library that's pluginable, you want to have like, yeah, I want to support all the mine types that GKPixPub supports, or like all the stuff that video stuff that GStreamer can read and stuff. And maybe we should hard code some specific things that I can use. Yeah, that needs some work. Actually, did you file a bug with Michael? Anybody else? Oh well, Dave. Another question. Oh well, if you're interested in hacking on it, you should read the paper I wrote for this. It has like 15 pages of stuff. It's a bit more detailed than what I talked about now. Yeah, I'm immature. I don't know it. I would love to integrate it again. The set has it, I think. I think set has it working or something. But I never actually used Medusa in Nodus 1, so I'm not even sure how it works or how it looks or anything, but it's a really neat idea, and if we could get the security thing going, I would love to have that. You know, it's a really powerful thing. Yeah. Well, I mean, the UI part is probably fine, but it's a hard problem back-end-wise. Well, it is made secure now because it runs as a user daemon, so it can't ever do anything more than Knowles could do itself, right? But then you get into trouble with everything, indexing everything, or like every user indexing everything, and using all of disk space for indexes, and maybe you don't want to read all sorts of directories, like system directories, which are maybe NFS or AFS or, you know, stuff like that. So, I don't know. It's a hard problem. I hope somebody's working on it. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard question. The easier answer is that we don't want to do that because then we're setting ourselves up for pain later when we want to change it. And it does change a lot. Like the icing container does change a lot. But on the other hand, it is sort of painful to make any direct review right now without using that. Well, I mean, one possible way would be to extract the actual icon view widget, so you could use that and they can at least make it look and sort of behave the same. But, I mean, for the direct review, using the oldest file itself would be nice. But then you would have to be an in-process view, or you would have to duplicate everything. And that may cause all sorts of binary ABI problems. It's a hard one. I'm sorry, right now it's just like we don't export it, and it looks hard to export it. And, yeah. Yeah, it is hard. I mean, I'm sorry about that. It is just too hard, but. No, but it should be easier, but it's not, and getting there is hard. Okay. I mean, you're just aggregating a bonobo component, right? I don't know if you can do that then. I mean, that thing normally works using the knowledge view. The knowledge view is used to communicate to the view, like, what is this location? And then the view is supposed to call back and say, okay, I'm loading it now. Like, regularly say, yeah, I'm still loading it, and then I'm done. And while that's been done, the knowledge window object makes sure that the trouble is troubling. Right, so I don't know. Maybe we can, extend that so you can manually trigger it from the bonobo component, perhaps. Yeah. You mean like a split? My personal opinion is that that does make things more complicated for the user, and it's also very much not the way all this internally is set up to be. Like, there's just one location per window, and it would be hard trying to fix that. And, I mean, you can still use these two windows, right? You can just place two windows right next to that. Yeah. Well, you can use add altab or something, but yeah. I mean, it does have its uses. I do think it flutters the API, the UI in a way that makes it a lot harder to understand. It's more of a power user. Turns the power engine into a power user thing, and where you can hide it, and Conqueror does by default, right? It doesn't split until you tell it to. But there's still like there's a splitter somewhere, and there's some strange menu items that you can split stuff. Yeah, to navigate it and stuff. Yeah. I don't know, I'm not a terribly good UI guy, and the original people doing all this, while some of them had like crack rock ideas, there's still like Mac UI people, and I tend to trust some of the stuff they did, and I'm not that inclined to change things radically. I don't know if that's the right approach, but I don't feel like I have the right ideas always, so that if I change stuff, I may just fuck it up. Now, what do you think about split views? Yeah, the whole conceptual thing changes. And yeah, that's the same with tabs and everything like that. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, the way the code currently is set up just needs massive changes all over the place. I mean, you know, the main window object just has one variable, like the current location, and that just doesn't work anymore. You have to, like, maybe not massively, but at least conceptually there's a lot of internal changes. And it might just be a variable to list, but it's probably a billion places that just assumes there's one location. You know, maybe even in the public APIs. It's not going to be possible to do via an extension. I'm sorry about that, but it's just the way it is. It's all out of process, the actual thumbnail generation, so the main thing you can happen is that the thumbnail will hang. I think there's a timeline somewhere. So, and while it hangs, nothing else with thumbnail. But then, that's about what can happen. So that's fairly safe. KDE hack was mostly because there was a runtime linker cost. And since we use C, we don't have that problem. Not, at least not in the same extent, because C++ generate vtables, realocs for every class, basically, and they cost a lot to it sort of depends on what's costly. If it's the actual page in of the library, that should be fine, because that's once you already loaded it, it should load faster. And if you had used like Prelink, for instance, the runtime linker cost should be almost zero. But if the whatever library in the thing takes forever, then we should just redefine that library, I think. I mean, that's the only way. Things shouldn't really like read a lot of files and init and stuff. I mean, it's hard to avoid sometimes, but you should try at least. I think, for instance, the new UDK stuff, using icon themes in UDK, needs to load lots of, you know, well, basically you need to redir a lot of stuff to look for. And every app will need to do that. And maybe we need to figure out some way to cache that. Yeah. I mean, you can keep around the factory for a while longer, right? So that's the way you do that. You. Yeah. Keeping around. Yeah, for a while, why? I mean, that would be the way to handle that, I guess. Yeah. Working on all this, and I would love people to work on it. I mean, sometimes it's a pain in the ass to like have to review patches and stuff, but really we need to start some sort of community, whatever. I mean, there's a GNOME community, but there isn't really an all this community. Well, there's a small one, but it's not large enough. Nothing. Okay. Hello.